Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. Well, since we last spoke together, we've gone to Elland Road, and we've won, and we've gone to Old Trafford, and as you will find out later, I think we should have won that game as well. Although, listening to other people, people seem to think that we were lucky to come away with a point. George, how did you see it?
Oh, my God, Paul. I have to be honest with you now. Because I can't speak for Andy, but I suspect a lot of this will ring with him. Because we are Manx, because we grew up in Salford, and all our mates were Man United supporters. You know, City were a bit of a joke at times in those days. The Liverpool derby, Everton-Liverpool, does not mean as much to me as that match yesterday. Playing United at their ground, because I spent so many years going and we never beat them and we never even really played well and we always looked like country bumpkins. The whole day was tense for me. I kind of dread it, and I'm sure it's exactly the way most Scouser-born Evertonians feel about the derby with Liverpool, especially in recent years because our record is so poor with them. So yesterday was oscillated wildly between one of the worst days I've ever had in my life and utter hysteria. So I really enjoyed the first 15 minutes of the match when we played with them and competed with them and went, no, we can do all this stuff as well. And then for some reason we decided to go, well, I'm not sure we can really. And United began to just play. And the number of times Maguire, not to mention both the fullbacks, who both got into our penalty areas endlessly, Wan-Bissaka and Shaw, Mr. I've eaten most of the pie, Shaw, was shocking to me. And eventually, you know, Rashford just tees up Cavani and we're one down, and you kind of go, well, all right then, come on, let's have a reaction. And there's no reaction. The rest of the first half was a nightmare of hardly getting out of our own half, can't string five passes together, don't fight, don't do anything, and eventually you end up with one of the worst moments of my whole life was Fernandes' fabulous goal, beautiful goal, but Everton just didn't watch it happen. Half-time. Half-time was the longest quarter of an hour I think I've ever spent in my life thinking, Why do I do this? Why don't you just give up football? Why don't you take up tiddlywinks? Why don't you find an easier way to do things?
Out with talk to yourself.
Yeah, it was horrible, Andy. I was going to say, oh yeah. So I do spend a bit of the second half thinking, well, I wonder what Ancelotti's going to say to them. At the interval, out they come for the second half. We don't touch the ball for a minute, and frankly, because I remembered this morning. Shaw burst into the penalty area and should have scored, and it would have been 3-0, game over. And Olsen made a really good save. And the next thing I remember was Rodriguez getting the second one and me going, and I know my wife's asleep upstairs. I'm going, hey, don't, never, don't. And thinking, you know, so now I'm in a state of hysteria. And then, unbelievably, Everton go, oh, that was it, really, that's our effort, we'll back off now. And I remember texting you two going, get into them, don't let them play, they can play. And so there was something utterly horrible about McTominay's 3-2 goal. He thought, well, that was bound to happen, you let that happen. And then, you know, the fabulous moment where DCL flattened Maguire, who lay down going, oh, well, I'll have a free kick, please, referee. We are at home. And the referee quite rightly rolled on. And he put Richarlison in. And I went, I don't believe it. We're going to draw this. And Richarlison didn't even hit the target. And then I thought, right, that's it. I'll write the suicide note now. And then we scored. So it was a wacky, wacky watch of a game of football. And nowhere near as pleasurable just for me, because it means a lot to me as a Manx, as the Leeds result was, which I really enjoyed the game of football, really enjoyed the way both teams played, and thought Everton deserved it. And I thought we got away with that yesterday. And the only other thing I wanted to add to this is Ancelotti's interview with the BBC afterwards was brilliant. What a brilliant man he is. He said, what did you say at half-time? And he went, there's no, you know, you've got to want it. You've got to up the urgency. You've got to up the belief. And that's what they did. But he said, you know, we showed that with that attitude and our quality, we can compete with people who he thinks are better than us. And he's right. They're second, we're sixth. But it's so, you know, a friend of mine just sent me a text saying that Guardiola and Klopp are playing mind games. And I texted back, I'm bored with all that stuff now that we've got a grown-up for a manager.
Yeah, that's my point.
I think that's a very good point. Andy?
Not a lot to add to that. I think our kids summed it up perfectly.
Was your day as angst-driven as...
I'll be honest, it wasn't quite as angst-driven as that. But I do understand perfectly where our kids coming from. We did go through rather too many years of all this nonsense with United and feeling second best to them all the time.
Yeah, exactly that.
And it does great. It really does. And I do appreciate the game against United holding perhaps certainly level standing, if not more importance than the derby. I do get where you're coming from with that. It was a bit bizarre yesterday that, as Ark had said, you know, for 15 minutes we went toe to toe with them, and then we seem to do this in so many matches. We have a decent opening quarter of an hour, and then it's almost as though, well, we're okay here. We can, you know, we'll be all right. And we ease off, and it's not something new. It's something that's been there for many, many years. And I've thought about it lots of times. Why do we play okay for 15 minutes and then ease up? And I just don't get that at all. But I mean, the first 10 minutes of the second half were wacko. It was just unbelievable, you know, from Olsen making the save, and inside 5 minutes we were 2-2 with them. It was just crackers, really. But I just want to come to the goal from Rodriguez, because the first touch and then the shot that he put into the ground, which De Gea was never going to get to it anyway because he placed it so well. But, if that was a deliberate ploy to actually put his shot into the ground so that it ricocheted off the ground, you know, maybe picked up a bit of pace off a wet pitch, then that was genius. But his first touch on the ball from Decore was sublime. Just bring it down. It sits up nicely and then hits it. Just tremendous finish.
He is a bit of a football genius, isn't he?
Well, he is. To be honest, I thought I didn't think he'd had a particularly good first half.
No, but he did, apparently.
Rodriguez, I really didn't. Conversely, though, first half, I thought Tom Davies was outstanding.
Yep.
I really did. I thought Davies... I thought whether Ancelotti challenged him, you know, right, I'm putting you into this, you need to have a good game, or this is the game for you to really show what you can do, Tom. Whatever Ancelotti said to him resonated, because I thought Davies was quite excellent yesterday, quite excellent, as was Gomez, who appears to have found a new lease of life. And I thought, but second half, I thought Gomez was really bossing things. You know, I mean, we're majoring on yesterday for obvious reasons, but I thought the first half as well at Leeds was tremendous. Again, whatever he said to them after the home loss to Newcastle, worked a treat, because that first 45 minutes at Leeds was arguably one of the best 45 minutes we've played all season.
What I love about that man is he tells you what he said to them. He's constantly telling you that this is not a complicated game. It's exactly like Clough. Without any of the bombast or the humour. I mean, you know, he's not a unwitty man, Carlo Ancelotti, at all, but it's a very simple game. And, you know, he goes into the dressing room at half-time yesterday and goes, well, this is what you'll get if you play without belief, if you play without commitment, if you play without courage. Why are you passing it sideways? Pass the ball forwards.
The comical thing on social media last night was in his interview, he said he told the players they were shy, and people thought he said to the players, you're shy.
He said what?
Apparently he said to the players, you're playing like you're shy.
Wow.
And people thought he'd said they were playing like shy, which I thought was really funny. I mean, you're right. I mean, it is a simple game, and we all overcomplicate it, particularly the pundits and commentators who like to try and talk utter drivel to us all the time, and generally do, and largely succeed at it as well.
I think it's like anything in life, Andy, isn't it? The real experts in doesn't matter what the subject matter is, the real experts in any given subject matter make it just sound so simple. So, you know, nuclear physics to an absolute expert can be explained very simply. You know, the counts can be explained quite simply. Ancelotti just, I get the impression with him is that he's always a little bit surprised that nobody else sees football as simply as he does. You know, that sort of like quizzical look that he gives, and he sort of like, you know, one eyebrow goes up. Yeah. To me, it's like, you know, clearly he knows that what he does works because of the results that it's generated throughout his career. And I get the feeling that he sits there and he thinks, why? Why does everybody else make it so complicated? Because it's really not that complicated. Obviously,
you can hear him on the touchline going, play faster.
Yeah. It is all very, you know, very simple commands, as you say. And that's his genius, I think, because he just sees the game in a very different way, I think, from most other people. And I think the players are really beginning to respond to that. Okay, the Newcastle game was, I think, an aberration. But to do what we did at Leeds, and then to do what we did last night, okay, we didn't do it all the time. We didn't have the belief that we should have had in the first half, and no doubt that was part of the message at half time, that you can't win a game of football unless you actually believe, like anything in life, you can't succeed in something unless you actually believe you're going to succeed in something. His man management skills must be incredible.
Probably the most impressive
I was just going to say, probably the most impressive thing about it was the fact that at 3-2 down and five added minutes signalled that they kept going. There obviously was belief there that they could get something from the game, and to get it so late into added on time was just. I mean, well, it was ironic, wasn't it, really? We got the equalising goal in Fergie time with Fergie sat in the stands. I wonder what his reaction was to that. You know, and fair play to DCL for keeping going. You know, because things have been a bit raw for him in recent weeks, but he's still working his backside off. And he got there. And it's funny, I said, what was it Gary Neville said on the Sky commentary? That he was annoyed that De Gea didn't come out and take DCL out. And it's like, all right, okay. So you want De Gea to flatten DCL, but everybody keeps whining on about Pickford maiming Van Dijk. you know, what are we now, 120 odd days in, and people are still whining about that. And yet there's him wanting his goalie, or wanting the United goalie, to do something of a similar fashion to DCL. Just glad that De Gea had more sense than to try that, and that DCL had the composure to control it and put it away.
And look what a lesson that will, you know, there was a lovely shot, and the bit I was watching as a cameraman followed him, and a big, big grin on his face. Yes, and what he's learnt is you do keep going to the very last second. Everybody always tells you that. Play to the last minute. But he knows it now in his blood.
Yeah.
Because he scored at, you know, at United. It's, there was some sweet things in it, but, you know, there's no getting away from the fact that United had an hour of that match and we had half an hour of it.
Yeah.
And that's there's no reason for that. It was far too much of us backing off in two lines of four and just letting them play in front of us. And as you said, they can play.
Yeah, they can play. They've got some very, very good players. And we shouldn't have stood off. We should have, as you said, kept saying in the text message, get into them. You know, rattle them a bit.
Oh, just compete with the buggers. Don't watch them.
We started first.
That's what Fernandez did. We watched him, and he went, "Oh well, if you're going to watch, how about if I put this over your goalie with him? With he's only got, you know, 2 yards to work in, and he's a big man, but I could do it." And he did it. It was classy. It's horrible. I hate him.
we started the game the first 15 minutes. Like a very, from my perspective, this is how I saw it. Like a very intelligent football side. We positioned ourselves in between the lines, so that, you know, United found it very difficult to get possession of the ball, but we always seem to have players available and relatively unmarked. And I guess the oddity, if you want to be hypercritical, is after having done that for sort of like 12-15 minutes, why we then sort of took our foot off the gas and we stopped doing the things which were very clearly working. You know, we had Richarlison out on the left-hand side in the first half. Oh, he was always the out ball.
Mm-hmm.
But how many times were we in a position to play the ball forward with Richarlison, or play the ball beyond Richarlison for him to run into space? And yet we still, after that sort of first 10, 12, 15 minutes, we still reverted back to a lot of square passing or passing back to Olsen rather than playing like the risk ball.
As a defense. That's what's so good about Rodriguez. No matter whether he's functioning well or not, he is prepared to try for the best possible pass he can make. Whereas, you know, a lot of lesser players and up and down the league, not just in Everton's team, go, I'll just pass this responsibility on to somebody else.
Exactly.
A bit more.
Yeah.
The Darren Gibson theory of football.
But, you know,
I had a feeling his name might come up today.
I just thought of him. I don't linger on Darren Gibson very often.
Oh, okay, I'll believe you.
Well, his potential bid for Wigan doesn't seem to have gone anywhere, does it? So, hey-ho. But when you've got a side with Rodriguez, Gomez, who is now, as the three of us acknowledge, looking like the player he was when he first came to us on loan, and you've got Doucouré in the side, and even to an extent, even Tom Davis in the side. There's four players who have got the ability, got the capability of hitting that risk ball. And I just hope that one of the things that we take out of yesterday's game is the belief that we can do it.
Yeah, play
because,
on the front foot and play at pace.
You know, you know, from a psychology point of view, the message that you take into Finch Farm on Monday, on Monday, will be, we won the second half 3-1.
Yeah.
It sounds obvious, but we scored, when we scored, we were on the front foot. We were playing football at pace, and we were playing the ball forward, and we were having runners running, you know, into dangerous positions. And this is why I say, you know, actually we could have scored more than three. I mean, DCL should have scored right at the end of the first half. Richarlison, Richarlison had a chance in the second half. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you're not going to convert every single chance, but perhaps one of the things that they will learn from this is, you know, play at pace, play the ball forward, and let's take some risks. We've got a good defence. We've got a good goalkeeper, even with the, you know, the possible mistake for the third goal. It looked like a slip. Yeah.
Yeah.
He
just lost his footing at the key moment when he's trying to push off.
Yeah. The really interesting thing about yesterday was that we didn't miss Mina.
Yeah, it was. The only time I thought of him was when Rashford lobbed Keane, and I thought, oh, well, Mina might have got that because he's 2-3 inches taller.
Mm. But Keane has a habit.
And he would have been happy to have clouted Cavani.
Keane has a habit, doesn't he? He hasn't done it very much recently, but I think if we went back to talking the Blues either at the end of last season or the beginning of this season, we used to talk about him getting underneath the ball. And he unfortunately for Cavani's goal, he did that yesterday. But, you know, I suppose mistakes happen. Yeah.
I wonder whether he reacted rather badly to being dropped. I watched Ancelotti's press conference, and there was some, you know, because it's him, there are some very interesting things in it. And they said something about, why were you so... They said, somebody asked the question, is it difficult for the players when they've got a week off, as opposed to, you know, what's happened in this particular season is normally you're playing twice a week. And he kind of went, yes, I think so. The players get into a rhythm and they're playing every third or fourth day. And I suddenly wondered, you know, because it must be so that if you... Everybody understands why you rotate, and I had no problem at Leeds when he went, no, you can sit out because I want you for United. But maybe it just didn't suit Michael Keane. Maybe, you know, there are players who just want to be on the pitch, man. That's, you know, I don't want to learn anything from watching. Do you know what I mean? He just looked a bit unfocused for bits of that game yesterday. The other thing that was... a disappointment, especially as United's players were doing it so much, was why, because Godfrey had a fantastic match against Leeds, a fantastic match. You looked at him and thought, oh my God, this is such a good buy, this boy. He's just the future. He's fantastic. And yesterday, he hardly made a single run forward. Whereas Lindelof, for God's sake, you know, JCB, and Maguire a lot, but Maguire has always trusted his own ability, came forward and made things happen by making extra men. And Godfrey's good at that, and I didn't understand why he didn't do it yesterday. I was surprised by that and disappointed by it.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, you know, going into the game, they're second in the table and hoping to go joint top. Maybe we did just simply pay them that bit, little bit too much respect. And Godfrey is against rampaging forward every now and again. Maybe was instructed, look, let's just not go crazy tonight. You know, we've got to...
What was great about the way he broke out against Leeds was he picked his moments perfectly. And this is...
Yeah.
What a sacrilege to say this, but I thought, the last person I remember doing that is Hansen, who used to choose the points where he came out of the Liverpool defence, and because he could play as well.
Mm.
You know, and he looked at Ben Godfrey and thought, oh great, I'm thrilled to bits that he's finally made it to the middle of the defence, and I'm intrigued as to what we think, how you know, will Ancelotti just... you know, recycle the defence so Mina and Keane get the Spurs match. What do we think?
I'm glad it's Carlo's problem and not mine.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because traditionally, in a defence, you keep your central defensive pairing consistent. You normally have your two favourites, and you play them every time they're fit enough to play. It's not usual for a top class side to keep constantly changing that central pairing.
Not. I wondered, because I don't know enough about tactics, despite sitting behind in front of Martin Keown once. But does he go to three centre halves at the back and play wing backs? Because he's got three centre halves now. He's proved it to himself that Godfrey is definitely a centre half, although he's more than capable of playing right back, left back, whatever you want. But does he play all three of them
against Spurs?
Against anybody, Andy. I'm kind of with Paul's point about get used to a system and stick with it.
I don't think he'd dare do so, George, to be honest. Because I think, although the club are never going to admit this publicly, the club realise, and I'm sure Angelotti more than anybody realises, the absolute imperative of qualifying for Europe this summer.
Mm.
Or this season, sorry. We have to do it for a number of reasons. We have to do it for financial reasons so that we can bank whatever cash we get from it next season, be it Europa League or be it, particularly if it's Champions League. But also in terms of retaining, for example, Richarlison. I think if we don't have European football to offer him come the end of the season, and you know clearly it's not been a great season for him so far, then I think it's difficult to retain him. I think it's difficult. It sort of puts us back. It would put us back a year in terms of who we might bring in into the team.
I agree with that.
If we've got Marcel Brands and we've got Angelotti and we've got particularly if we had Champions League football to offer, then actually we're in a buyer's market. We're in a very favourable position because we can offer people that we might want to acquire an awful lot.
Because we'll have squad places, won't we?
Yeah. Now, I think the summer's going to be difficult for us financially for very obvious reasons, just as it's going to be for all football clubs, because you know there's no guarantee that there will be full stadia even next season yet. I mean, I think we'll get close to it, but certainly not at the beginning of the next season, I doubt. So the financial constraints on football clubs are going to be there. But if we've got, as I say, particularly if we've got Champions League football to offer, we're in such a stronger position than we would be without it. So the point being that Angelotti might like to go to a back, go to a back three. And I personally would like us to play with a back three, not that my opinion counts for anything. But I don't think he's going to take the chance whilst playing a four is getting us results, particularly away from home.
Tell me why, because and this is an absolute no agenda question, why would you like to see us play three at the back?
Well, aesthetically, I think it's an attractive way of playing football. I think
it allows the fullbacks to get forward.
Because it allows the fullbacks to get forward, yeah. And that should really suit our style of play. I mean, our fullbacks get forward anyway, but they get forward.
Not as much as United did yesterday. They were amazing.
No, that's true. But they get forward as part of a four. And what happens with Everton is one of the central midfielders drops back into defence. So we've got a three anyway, whilst we've got two fullbacks further up the pitch.
Right.
If we had a three, it would actually allow. Not only would it allow the fullbacks to move forward, but it would also allow our central midfielders to occupy space higher up the pitch.
That would be a good idea, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, if you look at what happened yesterday, we didn't go to a three, obviously, but we were at our best yesterday because we played a bit of a diamond, didn't we, with Ducore at the top of the diamond. Because I thought Ducore was fantastic yesterday. Really, I mean, he's starting to look an exceptional player. But
covered an awful lot of ground yesterday, did Ducore.
I thought he was fantastic, and he popped up at both ends of the pitch. You know,
he was involved in both the first two goals, wasn't he?
Yeah,
scored the first and the cross for Rodriguez.
At the beginning of the second half, he cleared one from, you know, right in front of our own goal. So
yeah.
You know, he was effective at both ends of the pitch. But I think, especially if Sigurdsson's not in the side, we need somebody to, you know, be at the top of our midfield. Obviously, when Sigurdsson's in the side, then it's going to be Sigurdsson. But other than that, it could be Ducore, because he's starting to show that he can be very effective in the opposition's
particularly as and when Alan is back in the side, he'll be at the bottom of the diamond.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
I just wish that whatever the tactical thinking is, it was based around, please can we release Gomez from some of his defensive responsibilities? Because the change that comes over the man when he thinks, hang on, I've just got a chance to create here, suddenly his passing gets range and skill and wit and things, and he likes to run with the ball at people, and he's very good at that. He is not very good at being run at with the ball. He's likely to just stick a shoulder in and thump you because he's no tackler. And this is a waste of his gifts. When he first arrived that first season, he didn't have those kind of responsibilities at all. His job was to cause trouble for the other team. And I think that's his best position. And I think we're getting a bit flowery about him, but I do think he's better than he has been since that bad injury. But I still don't think he's quite back to where he is. But, you know, he's flourishing from being picked and trusted and encouraged. I would just, you know, like it tactically to move him forward, because I think when Fernandes scored that goal yesterday, what made me angrier more than anything was I'm thinking, yes, and the only person we've actually got on the pitch apart from Rodriguez who could do that is Gomez.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. He doesn't because he's not thrown forward enough. Anyway.
No, it's an interesting point, Arkad, because he certainly against Leeds and large sections yesterday, he looked a completely different player to the player who was playing.
He just loves to pass.
6-8 weeks ago. Yeah, he does.
That pass for Dinia
in the lead was
just fantastic. You know, it's like Glenn Hoddle spinning the ball backwards so you don't... You know,
I was thinking if that had been, you know, one of the more sort of liked clubs by the media, shall we say, one of the media more media friendly clubs, they would have been extolling the virtues of that pass for weeks. Yeah.
Paul, honestly, Paul, I think you should rid yourself of that mindset. And just enjoy being a Blue and knowing that people we're talking to now are going, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. The idea of the Daily Express wandering around sucking up to Gomez's backside would make me vomit. Leave him alone.
We're getting ahead of ourselves here, I think, a little bit. If we continue to make the progress that we're clearly making now in Ancelotti's first season, with, you know, a very threadbare squad, if we continue,
we're 13 points better than we were after this number of games last season.
Yeah, if we continue to make this progress, the media will not be able to ignore us.
I'm not saying the media should ignore us. I'm saying you should ignore the media.
He's had this argument with me, Paul, as well.
No, I think that's a very fair point. I mean, you know, they're largely, if your interest is solely Everton or almost exclusively Everton, as it is with me, the media are actually irrelevant because they don't cover us.
Well, I said to Andy yesterday, he didn't quite have the game I expected to have. But in a minute, the media are going to discover Ben Godfrey, and the way they will discover him is going, oh, surely he's got to go to United soon.
Yeah.
He must go to a bigger club. He can't stay with those hicks.
That's what really gets my nose about the media.
This is where you shouldn't read the media, because one has high blood pressure. God, sorry.
Yeah, because all they try and do is hawk our players elsewhere, and particularly if they hawk them towards Man United, that's what really irritates.
Yeah.
More than anybody else.
Yes, Andy.
Listen, I just want to come back on something when Paul was when we were talking about needing to play in Europe, obviously for finances and whatnot, and we touched on hopefully there'll be fans back in stadiums. Can we just have a couple of minutes on this about the effect of the fans not being in the stadiums? Because I heard something yesterday during one of the earlier games that already this season there have been more away wins in the Premier League than in the whole of last season.
But that's what Ancelotti said at his press conference. He was asked about that, and he said, look, we had 2,000 fans in for the Chelsea game and the Arsenal game, and the players were lifted, and they beat both of them.
Mm.
Now the players have gone, and the fans have gone, and it's a different thing. And he said it most definitely aids the away team.
The fact there's no fans in the stadium.
Yeah.
Particularly, and obviously, if it's in limited numbers, they're only going to be home fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what I'm suggesting is if COVID keeps its grip on everything, we just play away games next season.
That'd save on building a new stadium, wouldn't it? Just become a band of wandering minstrels.
But I mean,
here's another topic of conversation. We had the Olsen Pickford conversation a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And yesterday, I thought Olsen was unlucky with the third goal. So it doesn't, you know, I'm not going to comment on his goalkeeping at all, but I will comment on his kicking, which, especially in the first half, was not good. And suddenly you thought, oh, and this is something I really do miss about Pickford. Although his kicking can be erratic, it's very powerful and very purposeful and quicker than Olsen plays, although Olsen might well, you know, be told to play quicker. But I thought there was a difference there yesterday. There was a couple of kicks he made from the City end that were poor and kept us in trouble.
Now, right.
You know, Pickford is a kind of national obsession, isn't he? But
yeah.
That one aspect of his game, I think, is quite superior to Olsen's.
The flip side of that is, of course, is that Olsen appears to be a more calming influence at the back.
Yeah, but, you know, my argument against that is that Pickford brings an energy that goes, come on, come on, come on. And frankly, I think Everton need that more than calm. But, you know, I've got no complaints about Robin Olsen. And if he's picked for the next match, I'll go, great. Well, that's it. You know, we're very, very lucky.
At the end of the day, we've got proper cover
for that position.
Yeah, at the end of the day, whether the goalie is energetic or calm, we just need a solid goalie that we can be confident in and rely on game in, game out. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I like Pickford, but he does have the occasional rush of blood.
He does, Andy, he does, and, you know, the great goalies we've had.
Yeah, and those rushes of blood invariably prove costly. I don't think you're going to get a rush of blood from Robin Olsen. So,
no.
You know, I'm sure he'll start against Spurs because he's been playing in the cup matches, so he should retain his place, and that gives Pickford an extra few days to get over his injury, and then Carlo will make the call for the Fulham game next weekend.
Right.
But it's just, you know, everybody says you've got 25 players and what you want is two
in each position, yeah.
Well, goalie is covered.
Yeah.
We've got two excellent goalies. That's all. I just suddenly noticed yesterday, I thought, oh, for God's sake, I wish this was Pickford clearing the halfway line with all of these.
You see, I mean, it's impossible, isn't it? But I don't think we would have won the Leeds game with Pickford in goal.
I'm going to edit that out in case Jordan hears it.
Well, the Leeds game kind of hinged on that triple save, didn't it?
Yeah.
That was fantastic. But yeah.
To use George's point, the triple save came about because he had a poor kick out.
Mm.
We lost possession in our own half as a means of him kicking the ball out.
Right.
Albeit the pitch was not in great condition, was it?
Well, it's a brand new pitch. Well, I didn't realise that until the morning afterwards. We were talking about it on the radio. Apparently, it was a brand new pitch. It was only laid, last week.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, Adam Pope was telling me that the pitch that was there previously was the same pitch that they used for the Euros 96.
Mm.
So it'd been down for 24 years, or 25, nearly 25 years.
And had all them Leeds cart horses running all over it. Should have been fumigated.
I suppose it was like a carpet. It was sparingly used because there wasn't much football played on it.
Hey dear.
We're very buoyant, aren't we?
Yeah.
get a point, just slag everybody else off.
the funny thing was that Leeds paid what? They paid, was it £340,000 for the pitch?
Mm.
So they must have picked up the phone to Daniel Levy and said, before the transfer window closes, can we buy your pitch?
Wow, is that what one costs? That all it costs?
That's what they paid for it, second-hand pitch.
Gosh. Where did they get it? B&Q. Two football pitches, a training pitch, and a spare goal, please.
And throwing a bottle of screen wash.
Where does that leave us for the cup game then?
Well, we don't know. I mean, what's he going to do with? Well, we've already kind of touched on it. What's he going to do with the defence? Is he going to go three? Or I saw somebody this morning calling for Coleman to be back in for Holgate. I suppose the really nice problem is with Mina, Keane and Godfrey, as you said, Paul, he's got three centre-halves. And you would think that would lend itself to playing a 3-5, three at the back and then maybe five in midfield. With the fullbacks, be it Holgate or Coleman on the right and Deeney on the left, pushing into midfield or pushing forward. It's going to be interesting to see what he does. I think probably the only two names who are absolutely nailed on to start are going to be DCL and Olsen, because we don't know whether, probably Rodriguez will start, but he came off yesterday with a was it a tight hamstring?
Calf.
Tight calf, right, tight calf. So hopefully he'll be good to go against Spurs on Wednesday. It's going to be interesting to see who he does pick.
Well, he has to pick Godfrey because Son has got such pace that he could probably lose Mina and Keane, but he won't lose Godfrey.
You wouldn't have thought so, no. No, that's a fair comment. Maybe he will play the three at the back then.
I don't know. I mean, one of the fascinating things about having him as manager is every team selection is utterly fascinating.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
You find yourself 24 hours behind, going, oh, I wonder what he's going to say. What's he going to do? It's great. It's absolutely great.
the naming of the side has become part of the match
day
experience.
Because I mean you look at the Sigurdsson that performed for about an hour at Leeds was a completely different Sigurdsson to the one that turned out against Newcastle.
Gomez, to be fair to him.
Pardon?
They all picked up from that, not just...
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, you've got Sigurdsson who played tremendously well against Leeds, and Gomez who's picked his game up. Davis came in yesterday and had a really good game. Decore, he's nailed on to start, isn't he? He's got to be, you know. But the selection will be interesting on Wednesday night.
Of course, a lot of it will depend upon who's Spurs select. Will Spurs put out a full strength side?
Why would they not?
I was going to say you would imagine so, because where are they in the table now? They're eighth, ninth.
Yeah, but they've also got European football starting again, haven't they?
Right. Will he prioritise Europe over the FA Cup?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, you would. It's a bird in the hand, isn't it?
Interesting.
If you know what I mean. Probably. You know, the reason you're in the FA Cup is in order to get into Europe. Well, if you're already in Europe, you might as well give that up.
Just try and stay there.
Ways, because whoever wins that tournament, and he won it 2 years ago, didn't he? Goes into the Champions League.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, Wednesday will be interesting. I mean, the other thing is, I was going to say he can't because he's cup tied, isn't he, Josh King? So he's not a factor on Wednesday, even to come off the bench.
No, he's cup tied. So
yeah, what do we make of that? What do we make of the signing of Josh King?
I've only seen 21 minutes of him.
No, I mean in as much as, you know, he did okay at Bournemouth, but he's not done very much this season with Bournemouth. And yet there was an awful lot of people seemed very, very keen for Everton to sign him. I'm not saying it's wrong, by the way. Just looking at stats, it appears a little bit underwhelming, given he's not scored in the Championship all year for Bournemouth. But what do we think? Did we think that was a planned move, or was it just to appease the fans with a transfer window signing move?
I don't think it was to appease the fans.
Right,
no, me neither.
I think it was a piece of opportunism.
Yeah.
Driven through necessity, of course, because, you know, clearly we couldn't go into the last half of the season just with two attackers. We had to find some cover, having let so many people out. I mean, you know, we released nine players during the window.
Yeah.
Three of which were attackers, if you include Anthony Gordon. So, I don't think we were left with any option. We had to bring somebody in, and you know, United offered 20 million for him 12 months ago. Oh, sorry, not even 12 months ago. Last summer.
Right.
When he had 12 months left on his contract, and ridiculously,
Bournemouth, he looks useful.
Bournemouth didn't take
that
money
for him. I had no opinion about him until he came on against Leeds, and he looks useful, and he looks like a better football player and a more potent football player than Tosin.
Well, he always played well against us.
Yeah,
but then that's not necessarily a great qualification.
Well, we could put a stop to that.
sign him.
There.
it's back to the old days, isn't it? If you have a good game against Everton, they bought you.
Yeah. Benny Wright.
Yeah, but oh my God. Let's not go there.
But I suppose the other thing about him is he can play anywhere across the front three, so left wing, right wing, or down the middle. So,
like I said, I only looked at it from a position of stats, and from a statistical view, it looked a bit underwhelming. But I wish the lad well.
Do you think there's any possibility he should have worked to start him on Wednesday?
Well, he can't. He's cup-tied, isn't he?
Oh, sorry, I'm talking through me hole.
Yeah, but, I mean, it just makes you wonder whether he might get the Fulham game at the weekend.
Right.
You know, because, I mean... Sorry, Paul?
Who's he going to replace?
I guess, looking at form, you'd have to maybe suggest he plays up alongside DCL at the expense of Richarlison. Although, DCL I'll temper that. I was going to say DCL might fancy a rest, but DCL won't fancy a rest because he's probably the hungriest player on the squad at the moment. Him and Godfrey.
And he's just hitting form. We said last week, didn't we, that he's a bit of a streaky player. So
yeah,
he will go a number of games without scoring, and then he'll go a number of games scoring. So
yeah, I don't know. Maybe Richarlison goes to the bench against Fulham if we're going to give Josh King a start. Because I mean, Richarlison, for all the effort he puts in, and he's his best work at the minute appears to be, you know, in our half of the field rather than in the opposition's half of the field. He's lacking something up front at the moment. Whether it's a bit of composure, he needs a goal. Maybe he needs one to go in off his elbow or off the back of his head or something. But
he functions on goals, that boy.
Yeah,
that's what makes him potent. He wants to score. He's absolutely determined. If you just compare him off the top of my head with James Rodriguez, who wants to play and wants to play the best pass he could possibly play. Richarlison will do that, and he's learnt, and he's not, he's a very effective football player. But what he really wants to do is score.
Mm.
And I think if he gets one, it'll set him off. But, he had a couple of efforts yesterday, and neither of them were on target. That must worry him as much as anybody else. I wouldn't drop him. But he'll certainly start on Wednesday, won't he, against Spurs?
Oh, yeah.
And with any luck, he'll find a way through his... It's a bad patch for him.
Mm. He's also not... He's not the type of player that would, I think, take readily or take easily the idea of being dropped.
No, quite.
I think...
No. Major Sulko.
Well, but on the flip side of that, if he is rested, stroke, dropped for the Fulham game, then if he's peed off about it, the game after that, we've got City coming up, and then the Anfield derby. So, the chances are he'd be back in for them.
But in terms of a potential rant, that decision to restage a match that City called off without consulting Everton 4 days before Everton played the champions of England is. It's a kind of, if you were asking someone who does my job to go, can you explain the mentality here? I go, that's revenge, that's meanness.
Mm.
It's inconceivable that they would do that to City themselves.
But the problem is they've got Europe coming up as well, and they're still in everything. So they just had to. This is how it was put to me. They just had to shoehorn the game against Everton into a gap, and the only gap that would suit City because of their commitments with other competitions is to play between Fulham and Liverpool. I was as incensed as you are, kid. I thought it was bang out of order, and my immediate question was, who on earth would an Everton Football Club agree to that?
But Andy, what it brings into fine focus is the actual original decision to postpone the game.
Yeah.
Because they would have known at the time of postponing the game exactly the issues that you've just mentioned. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have been a surprise. Oh, look, they don't have any free dates in the calendar. Let's stick it there. They knew that they had very few free dates.
Mm.
And both the Premier League and Everton, when informed, would have been aware of that as well.
And it still doesn't explain why, when they had enough players fit and COVID free, they weren't forced to put a side out.
Absolutely, Andy. 100%.
Well, it can be explained. It can be explained by saying clearly the Manchester City have a stronger lobby with the Premier League than we do.
Yeah, but Paul, I'm gonna accept that. But what's the point of rules if you could just lobby your way around them?
Oh, sure, for sure. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just pointing out that Manchester City, for one reason or another, have greater influence with the Premier League than we do.
Those reasons are clear and obvious because they make more money for them and they are the world leading brand and la 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 la. That's no reason to say if you've got 14 fit footballers, you must play the game. Oh, sorry, City, your chef's got a cold. Cancel it, mate.
The Premier League, one of the primary responsibilities of the Premier League is to maintain the integrity of the competition.
And well, they've done that, haven't they?
And that should mean that they treat every club equally, regardless of that club's status and stature.
Mm.
But
I'm not going to hold my breath on that one, Paul.
I mean, that comes down to the weak leadership within the Premier League, that they can be influenced by, you know, ostensibly a stronger club picking up the phone and saying, this is what we want to do.
Mm.
When, you know, Richard Masters, if he had any gumption about the guy, would turn around and say, I'm sorry, the rules are quite clear. We agreed at the beginning of the season that if you had 14 or 15, whatever the figure was, 14 or 15 players available, that would not be a reason to postpone a COVID game. And nobody had the courage to say that, or the state
and
of
now,
mind, the
Everton,
presence to say that.
We were in a really dangerous position because of what you said half an hour ago about how we need to qualify for Europe, have to play what you could say are probably two of the toughest teams in the competition within 4 days.
Mm.
Now, what does that say for our chances of achieving what we want to achieve? It's not the best. I don't think anybody at Everton would have voted for that, and I don't think anybody at Everton was asked. I think they were told.
Yeah, they were probably told because, well, City have got European commitments, and the overriding concern should be the domestic competition, surely.
Well, the overriding concern should be integrity and treating every club equally.
No, I mean, I appreciate that, Paul, but what I mean is from the Premier League's point of view, you know, they've acquiesced to suit City.
Yeah.
It's not done, Everton any, not done Everton any favours, unless Everton get really fed up about it and go out and trolley them.
We have to use adversity as a means of.
Yeah, exactly. The world's against. It's almost like the Millwall scenario, isn't it? The world's against us, so bugger them.
No one likes us. We don't care. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Adam Pope from BBC Leeds made a very good point about Leeds the other day when I was speaking to him. He said that many Leeds supporters hate the fact that Leeds are, for many players, for many spectators, their second favourite team.
Yeah. They'd rather be hated like they were in the old days.
They're exactly. Used to being hated, aren't they?
Yeah.
They did give them a back to the wall, but you know that works from time to time. You know, that obviously worked.
Yeah, and look, we often, and we've said for a long time, representing Everton as the people's club, representing Everton as, you know, a club with strong interests in the community and everything else, can be viewed as a weakness from a competitive point of view in football.
Mm. Yeah, the nice club.
Yeah. If people think you're nice, then they're going to treat you as if you're nice, and that's in football. That just doesn't. It just doesn't work. Anyway, that's an entirely.
Did you clock that wonderful moment yesterday when DCL scored right at the last second, and Fergie, not that Fergie, our Fergie Ferguson, just went AWOL and picked up that Ancelotti to give him a hug, and you could hear Ancelotti go, "Oh, for goodness sake!" This huge Scottish man goes, "Hey, boy, get here!" It was fantastic. Ancelotti was not prepared for what Ferguson did.
I hope he appreciated it.
I did.
Surely did. Yeah, surely did.
The other interesting thing, reaction to the goals was two. There's photographs on social media of Sigurdsson telling some of the United players to shut up because you know they were bitching about not being a foul. He was holding his finger to the lips, and I'm not going to repeat it for obvious reasons. But Ben Godfrey's comments to some of the United yeah. players was delightful.
I haven't heard this. Can you edit?
They were calling for offside, and while all the Everton players were climbing all over DCL, Godfrey looked round to see that the linesman hadn't put his flag up for offside, and he mouthed something towards the United players to the effect of "Take that." Holy everything off!
But they're a whiny lot.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But that's. They're whiny because they believe that gives them a competitive advantage. Liverpool are exactly the same.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Must be a trait of wearing red.
But it's like I said to you during the week, Paul, you know, the cliches that one used to involve yourself in were like, let's keep a clean sheet, which you know, makes a load of sense. You can't lose the match. But, you know, when you go to Old Trafford, you just go, please, no Ferdinand, no Fernandes penalty. And we kept that one quiet. Oh, they've got a bad taste in my mouth now. We're back to talking about United.
But, you know, I mean, that perversely, this is the issue, isn't it, with VAR. VAR was brought in because of a... perceived bias against the you know, against the smaller clubs for in favour of the bigger clubs, and actually all that's happened is that VAR has sort of justified that belief exactly.
Yeah,
I mean the sending off in the Fulham game yesterday,
absolutely outrageous decision, shocking. It makes you wonder what on earth Lee Mason and Mike Dean are smoking, because the guy clearly is just trying to get his arm behind Mitrovic. And yes, he catches him in the face, but he's not looking. He's just lifting his arm to put it behind him. And to go over and review it and watch it three or four times as Mike Dean did and then brandish the red card... I was really surprised that Moyes didn't run on the pitch and chin him.
He was only 4 or 5 yards away from the incident, and he was looking. Yeah. He was looking directly at it. How many games of football has he refereed? Hundreds and hundreds of games. Yeah. Are you telling me that he couldn't evaluate a system? Evaluate a moment in the game? With all the experience that he has, it's not like he's some junior referee who's
no.
Doing
and even if he is referred by the idiot in the truck to go and look at it on the screen, that should have confirmed to him that there was nothing malicious in it whatsoever, and that it was a pure accident. But
the question, I suppose, will always be, you know, what purpose is the referral? Is the referral, I think you've got this wrong. You need to go and look at it. Mm. Or is the referral, I don't know, you go and look at it, you're the referee.
Well, they're not going to answer that question, are they? They never do.
Whatever the process is, it's clearly warped. That was absolutely shocking.
If the process, and I think this is the process, where the VAR referee says, I think you've got that wrong, you better go and look at it, then... The referee's got an even greater cause to say, "I'm sorry. I'm the referee. I'm the guy on. You know, I'm the guy who's in charge of the game." My view is that this was clearly not.
Did he give the red, and then the VAR questioned it?
No. he didn't give anything. Or did he give a yellow to begin with? I don't think he gave anything, did he?
No, he didn't give anything. It was. He'd obviously got the call in his ear hole from Lee Mason, because they were getting ready to take the free kick. So the ball wasn't in play. And Mason's obviously said to him, I think you need to have a look at this. Deliberate foul play. He's gone and had a look at it and agreed. It was nonsense.
See, we kind of expect referees not to, because of the nature of the job, not to be biased, not to be human. I don't know quite what I'm suggesting here, but, you know, I'm going to shut up. Sorry, I wish I'd never started that. I'm going to edit that bit out as well.
No, but I think I know what you're saying, George. It's a valid point that obviously throughout the history of sport, it's been accepted that referees, umpires, judges, whatever, linesmen, are going to make mistakes. And maybe I'm just an old fart, but I actually just think that's part of the game. And you take, as you do in life, you take the rough and the smooth and you deal with it.
Yeah, what I was suggesting was a bit darker than that. There's ego involved in it. He gets a call from Lee Mason. I don't know what Mike Dean's relationship with Lee Mason is, but, you know, does he take some pleasure in going, I'm deciding, right, he's off. You're wrong, Lee. Stick it up your bum. I don't know. You can't know, because they never, ever talk about it. I don't understand why they don't talk about it. It's not a mystic thing, because we've all reffed in our days. You know, we've all reffed a match at some point.
But the adult way of doing it is to do it as they do it in cricket, where everybody's mic'd up.
Yeah.
And the mic is played over the broadcast. So,
yeah.
You know, in cricket, it works perfectly, because you...
It does in rugby league, it does in rugby union, it does in the NFL, it does in the NHL. There's only football has taken video review and made a complete town halls of it.
Yeah.
Everything else it works in. Tennis, and with the line, you know, Hawkeye.
But the reason why it's been done in the way that it's been done, if you recall when VAR first came out, was that they couldn't trust the fans in the stadium to accept the result or to accept the conversation that was being relayed to them. Mm. It was the fear of violence from fans, which is nonsensical in this day and age.
All those people in seats are going to start bashing each other.
Something like that, but allegedly. You know,
well, at almost every ground, the away fans, what kind of violence were they worried about?
But it's like you've said in the past, Arcade, they kept it quiet because we're not adult enough to understand what's going on. They just treat the fans with contempt. We're a necessary evil.
I want a poll of every professional football player in the four leagues and the managers, and I want them to go, if we take out VAR tomorrow, I mean, I know some of them don't use it, what is your view on this? And go with that. These are the professionals. I feel as though this technology has come between the people involved in football. I'd be really surprised if the players went, no, it's a good idea. Mm. You know, but then I have huge respect for Guardiola. And Guardiola has always said, no, get it in there. God's sake, we need all the help we can get. Meaning the referees, not Man City.
Mm. You sure about that, George?
Yeah, no, Man City got their own help from elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, they don't need VAR, they just lobby.
Right, gents, we've been talking for an hour and 15 minutes. So,
have we come on? Good
I think we better give our listeners a bit of a break.
And we'll be back next Sunday with
the London results.
Two more London sides.
Isn't the Fulham game Sunday evening?
Is it Sunday evening or Sunday lunchtime?
I thought it was Sunday evening, but...
I can't remember.
Oh, right, well, maybe we'll just have to come back after the Spurs game, then.
We will be back, don't worry.
Yeah, as MacArthur said, I shall return.
Okay, guys, thank you so much for your time, as always.
Cheers, mate. Pleasure.
I hope everybody has enjoyed listening to our rambling. And as we always say, keep safe.
Yeah, keep safe.